a Fueled by Coffee production.
My name is Ben Burrell, and this is Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that brings you an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by records. So this podcast is being recorded in October 2020, and the world is still a very, very strange place. Hope you're doing all right. Hope you're coping all right. This is a bit of a different episode this time round. We're having a look at the kind of background to Bob's Standards era. As I said before, I like this era. I find it kind of fascinating. It's not my favourite era musically, but there's something about it. There's something intriguing about it. I think it did a lot for Bob, and we'll have a little bit of a look at that in this episode. Before we get started, I want to give a quick mention to Marv, who is a listener to this podcast, who set up his very own podcast that looks at podcasts. We finally reached that meta place, that postmodern place with podcasting. It was really great to chat to him. So if you want to find out more, well, I guess not find out more, but if you want to hear two men talk about podcasting and me putting together this podcast, then that's the one for you. The link to that is in the episode's description. Go and have a listen when you get 5 minutes. And also, because this is a shorter episode than normal, I thought it would be a good opportunity to answer some questions. I get some questions on Twitter and Instagram and via the website that are usually along lines like these. So I thought I'd answer them on the podcast. For example, hi to Jay, who says, are you going to look at the bootleg albums anytime soon? I don't know. I kind of want to concentrate on the studio albums first. I was toying with the idea of setting up a Patreon show where we do an episode every kind of week or every 2 weeks or something like that throughout the year, rather than this one that stops and starts. Let me know your thoughts on that. If you'd be up for that, let me know. But we'll see. I'd like to definitely do it more regularly, but as I've mentioned a lot, these shows take ages to write. Maybe it's just me, and I am dyslexic as well, so maybe it's that, but they just take ages to do. So we'll see. But if you're interested in a more regular, like, Patreon-type show, then let me know. Hi to Tony, says, Ben, will you revisit Oh Mercy? Yes, I will definitely revisit that album. Regular listeners will know I'm always harping on about it. It's an incredible record, and it was the first ever episode for this podcast, and it was done as, like, a kind of pilot, not like a proper episode. It didn't go as in-depth as some of the later episodes. So, yeah, I definitely will revisit that. We'll revisit that soon, rather. And hi to Andy, and actually a couple of others have mentioned this. The volume on some of the episodes is lower than other podcasts. It's not my fault. I know, it's so frustrating. My kind of day job is I'm a radio presenter, so I'm obsessed with the quality of audio. And to have a podcast where you upload it and then the distributor does something with the volume is unbelievably frustrating, believe me. When it's your job to get stuff like that right. I have spoken to Audio Boom, who distribute this podcast. They don't quite know what the problem is, but they are looking into it. Please bear with us. Hopefully we'll find a solution at some point soon. But yeah, I know it's a problem, and we are working on it. Thank you for your questions. If you have one, then feel free to get involved. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Bob Dylan Podcast, and you can email via bobdylanpodcast.com. So let's have a look at the background to Bob's Standards era and just why he became so obsessed with Frank Sinatra.
That old black magic has weaved its spell. That old black magic that you weave so well. Those icy fingers up and down my spine.
On paper, this whole era is a strange move for Dylan. A man who many only associate with folk or rock music is here in an entire part of his career doing nothing but standards covers. It does feel a little bit left field, but actually this shouldn't be a surprise at all. Dylan's always loved this music, and he's been cutting it for a long time too. For a start, Moonlight from 2001's Love and Theft sounds like it's Dylan's attempt at a Sinatra ballad.
The seasons, they are turning, and my sad heart is yearning to hear again the songbird sweet melodious tone. Won't you meet me out in the moonlight alone?
Also in 1990, during the sessions for the LP Under the Red Sky, he cut Some Enchanted Evening with the band NRBQ, which stayed unreleased. Also in the same decade, Dylan appeared at Sinatra's 80th birthday party. Unlike the other performers, he opted to do one of his own songs rather than a cover. Apparently Frank himself requested that. One of the producers played him the tune Dylan would do and showed him the lyrics, and Sinatra fell in love with it.
But the bottle's out done, and we killed everyone, and the table's full. Says it's closing time.
some different world can be down the road.
The 80s also saw That Lucky Old Sun appear in live sets of Bob's. So it's no surprise that both Some Enchanted Evening and that song end up on the first album of this era, Shadows in the Night. It also shows how invested Dylan was in Sinatra. I think he looked up to him as a performer. I mean, who wouldn't? But interestingly, I also think Dylan finds a companionship with him too. Few artists have the type of stature that Dylan has. Other artists have sold more and played bigger gigs or charted higher than Bob, but not all have his iconic status. There's only a handful of artists like Dylan. Compared to his contemporaries, Bob is always out in front. Take Neil Young or Joni Mitchell or Van Morrison, for example. They just don't have Dylan's type of fame. In fact, not to be too morbid, but this type of iconic status usually belongs to tragic stars like Kurt Cobain or Janis Joplin or Jimi Hendrix or Buddy Holly. They, like Dylan, have a mystery, a kind of ethereal type of fame. Few living artists actually possess this. Dylan is in the company of Jagger or McCartney or even Madonna. They define an era of the world culturally. Sinatra is obviously the same. No wonder Dylan related to him. In fact, in a Q&A with author Bill Flanagan, Dylan records Sinatra telling him, "You and me, pal, we've got blue eyes. We're from up there. These other bums, they're from down here." And I agree, people like Dylan and Sinatra are just from a different planet to other stars. While Bob obviously loved these songs, I think it's more than that. I think he felt close to Sinatra for the lives they have both experienced. I mean, also he was clearly a fan too. He remembers seeing him for the first time. He's quoted as saying, "I think I saw him in 67 or 68 at the Civic Arena." He recalls that Sinatra played Summer Wind and Day in, Day Out and Moonlight in Vermont. He also seems to identify with the songs too. Like we saw in a previous episode of this podcast, you feel Dylan gets what's going on in a lot of these songs. He could have written many of them. In the same Q&A, he says, "There's enough of my personality written into the lyrics of these tunes, so I just have to focus on the melodies within the arrangements." During this Q&A, we also get a glimpse into the studio setup too. You won't be surprised to learn that a lot of the songs were cut live in this era. When asked if it was difficult to sing with a live horn section, Dylan replied with a flat no. Later, he mentions that unlike his other records, he didn't experiment in the studio. There was no hitting record and just seeing where the track went. It was planned. It was concise. He says, "If I did experiment in the studio, the song would fall apart. No one would be able to follow me. Improvising would disrupt the song. You can't go off track with these." There's also a feeling here he wanted to get these songs right, almost to do them justice. So this is obviously a passion project for Dylan, and it's a good one too. Rather than most passion projects where you get some sort of like self-indulgent records where he covers his own work or reworks his songs or gives them a new perspective, here it's an interesting project where he does something new with songs he's loved for years. As we've seen already, it's quite a novel idea. For the most part, Bob shrinks the Sinatra arrangements to just his band. The songs move from seismic ballads of the crooner era to late-night tales from a mature Dylan. It's a unique take, and it really does the songs justice, and I think that is obviously key. There's no point in doing something brand new if it doesn't complement the songs. It definitely brings something new to the table. And while this definitely is a passion project, it hardly ever strays into the territory of forgetting about its audience. Having said that, while I do enjoy the era, it might have been a misstep to finish with a triple album. Three records is pushing it, but a triple album to finish just feels a little bit too much. As we'll see, by the time we get to the triplicate album, the final album in this run, the magic is starting to wear off somewhat. Regardless, this also highlights one of my favourite Bob traits. He does the unexpected. When the Beatles were singing Ticket to Ride, he was making Blonde on Blonde. When disco was in the charts, he was going gospel. He brought reggae to his sound in the 80s, and not to mention bringing an intellectual stamp to folk music in the early days. I mean, how many songs have words like this?
"A bullet from the back of a bush took Medgar Evers' blood. A finger fired the trigger to his name. A handle hit out in the dark. A hand set the spark. Two eyes took the aim behind a man's brain. But he can't be blamed. He's only a pawn in their game."
This is the very essence of why we love Bob. He doesn't always make for a solid career. In fact, at times when he does go in an unexpected direction, it results in a disappointing effort. But it also results in some stunning moments too. For every Lenny Bruce, there's an Every Grain of Sand. Sorry if you're a fan of Lenny Bruce. This era has it too. There's some songs that I feel are a little bit of a misfire, but there's some wonderful moments as well.
What'll I do when you are far away and I am blue? What'll I do?
This period of Bob's career also serves a purpose away from the actual recorded music. Dylan has never shied away from putting albums out, even with big personal or career shifts like the one we saw between Blonde on Blonde and John Wesley Harding. There, he barely even went a year without releasing. The biggest gap we've had between official studio albums came between 2001's Love and Theft and 2005's Modern Times. This, you feel, was down to Dylan having released two big records in a blazing career comeback. With that comeback came renewed interest in Bob, which generally puts space between records. There's larger tours and more promotion and more interest getting in the way of actually recording. After that, he was pretty consistent, releasing twice in 2009 and then again in 2012 with Tempest, before bringing us the Standards era albums in 2015, 2016 and then 2017. After the Tempest LP, though, Dylan clearly wasn't in the right frame of mind to write. It would be 8 years between the original studio albums of Tempest and 2020's Rough and Rowdy Ways, his big comeback. For me, these Standards era records were there to fill time, but you also get the impression they were there to give Dylan something to do as well, keep his creative energy flowing. It's interesting that Bob's two big recent career comebacks, and I use the word recent relatively speaking there, have both come off the back of a run of covers albums. In 2020, we had just finished the Standards outing, while in 1997 we get the glorious Time Out of Mind, possibly Dylan's biggest ever comeback. That comes after World Gone Wrong and Good As I've Been to You in 1992 and 1993. I don't think this is a coincidence. Maybe these albums reminded Dylan of his love for music, and he revels in the songs he enjoys and the songs he'd like to sing. Also, like we saw on the self-portrait album episode of this podcast, these albums also might be a good testing ground for potential new ideas or sounds. I Contain Multitudes, the stunning opener from 2020's Rough and Rowdy Ways, isn't exactly like the Standards era sound, but it might have been born out of it.
Today and tomorrow, and yesterday too, the flowers are dying like all things do. Follow me close, I'm going to Ballinali. I'll lose my mind if you don't come with me. I fuss with my hair and I fight blood feuds. I contain multitudes.
Like we've seen time and time again, every era of Dylan's career serves its purpose, even if at times it doesn't seem like it. Here on these albums, Dylan was scratching an itch. He was stimulating his creativity and also giving himself a break from writing. If three albums worth of covers then leads to an album like Rough and Rowdy Ways every time, then Bob could cover the phone book and I'd be excited about what comes next.
Wasting all your time just bragging when you should be busy plowing and plotting. You stand there rotting, get no harvest to your horn. Bragging, folks ain't got no use for bragging. If your fields are greener, folks will hear about it. You don't have to shout it, fields are green before you are born.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Next time, we are having a look at the next album in this era, Fallen Angels, which I'm not quite as keen on as Shadows in the Night, and we'll get to why in that episode. In the meantime, as I mentioned, if you want to listen to Pods Like Us, the episode from a listener, Marv, about podcasting, then the link is in the episode's description. And if you want to buy me a coffee, the link for that is in the episode's description as well. Until next week, thanks once again for listening, and goodbye.
A Fueled by Coffee production.